We have a number of speakers from the family in honor of Dave Romano. The first speaker is Dave's daughter, Rochelle Romano.
Thank you, Rabbi and Papa. Although Dad said last week, everyone has to die sometime, he really wanted to live. It was exactly 7 days ago that I crouched low at his bedside after 32 days in the hospital and said, "Dad, you are really, really sick." With his eyes closed, he said, "I am sick, not really sick." This was a guy who really wanted to live. And he did. Dave was born September 26, 1926, to Isaac and Esther Romano, the first boy after three girls. His sisters, Faye, Edith, and Rose, must have loved their new baby brother. One by one, his sisters married and left home, and Dad was living with Grandma Romano. He said he sold newspapers downtown to make ends meet. Grandma raised her kids somewhat by herself because Grandpa died of leukemia in 1943. Dad was just 16. Dad was a bit of a rebel rouser, as he described himself. He spent more time out of class than in class. He preferred hanging with the boys and playing ball in the street. He was a proud kosher commando and talked of those days fondly. The Sephardics all lived in one area, and that was their social life. He attended Garfield High and then got enlisted in the Army in 1944. At the time, he was dating Rebecca Piha, his good friend Joe Piha's little sister. They wrote love letters to each other while he was overseas, which were sweet and endearing. They married August 2nd, 1947, and continued writing very sentimental and endearing notes to each other over the course of their next 67 years together. And I have them all at home in a box. Dad worked a variety of odd jobs when first married. He was a Fuller Brush salesman. He sold shoes at Ralph's. He even drove a taxi, calling himself a professional driver up until his 80s when we were trying to take his car away. He kept telling me he was a professional driver. But Dave is best known for shooting the breeze behind the bar at his three taverns that he owned together with his partner and brother-in-law, Joe Piha: the Attic in Madison Park, the Cellar on Capitol Hill, and the Interchange in Kent. In 1948, Jerry, his son, was born. 4 years later, Estelle, and 10 years later, I appeared. Oop! Family meant so much to them, and a Jewish education was right up there with Little League dance lessons and summer camp. Jerry, who later changed his name to his middle name, Isaac, after his dad's father, went through Sunday school at Ezra Beceris, as did Estelle. He was also bar mitzvahed there. By the time I reached school age, my parents wanted more of a Jewish education for me and enrolled me at Seattle Hebrew Academy. My parents were proud to be a part of this community. Years later, their grandson David would attend SHA, and then years after that, our daughter Brielle would attend Jewish day school. Dad used to always say, Lador Vador, from generation to generation. Mom and Dad hosted big Passover Seders and Rosh Hashanah dinners, and as I look around, I see a lot of my family who, you know, grew up at our house. Sometimes there were 40, 45 people. There was always good cheer and lots of singing. Even in the last years at Klein-Gallen home, Dad would break into song. If a name or a phrase reminded him of an old tune, he would just sing it. After we kids left home, Mom and Dad ramped up their traveling. They spent many months and winters in Palm Springs, vacationed in Israel and Greece at least 4 or 5 times. They loved cruising and seeing all parts of the world. But before they could afford all of that, they would pile us up in the car and drive down to California, it seemed, every couple of years. Dad would come home from the tavern at 2 or 3 in the morning, and he'd say, "Get up, kids, we're going to California. You can sleep in the car." So I have fond memories of all those drives down, all those road trips. They continued to drive down to California many more times for bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, later flying for weddings of first cousins, second, and even third cousins. They never missed a party or a simchah. Their visits to New York while I was living there were frequent and fun. Daddy Dave, as my husband Rob called him, became a father figure to many, not only his son-in-law. Dad was the uncle that his nieces and nephews would go to for good counsel or to bounce an idea off. He was an entertainer behind the bar and at many cocktail parties that they hosted and were guests of. He was the guy with the champagne glass always toasting. They belonged to a group called Mr. and Mrs. for at least 30 years, I would say. The men played poker and the wives would entertain themselves. And since I was the only child still at home of all of my parents' friends, they would bring me along. And it was great getting to know all of my parents' friends, and they got to, in turn, watch me grow up. Dad knew a little about a lot. He was the fact man, with a lot of BS thrown into the mix, as we come to find out later. Sarcasm and joking were some of his best or worst qualities and pastimes. And then there was golf. He wasn't the best golfer, Ed, as I have been told many times, but he loved the social aspect, the days out with the guys. He especially loved golfing in Palm Springs among the palm trees and sunshine. As a side note, when we finally convinced him to give up the driving, I cleaned out his car to give it to donate to Chabad, and there were 4 sets of golf clubs in there, and he hadn't golfed in like 8 years. So they were just all there getting rusty. 18 is a significant number in Judaism. The numbers 8 and 10 correspond to the Hebrew letters Het and Yud, which when you put them together, it says Hai, which is life. And Dad was discharged from the army on January 18th, 1945, giving him a chance to live. 70 years later, he died on May 18th, allowing him to live again in his next life, I believe. I want to thank my sister Estelle for all of her help and love she showed Dad, from days sitting at the hospital with him to picking up and dropping off Liel when I needed her too. She was always there physically and emotionally, as was my husband Rob. Rob, you have been a great son-in-law, and especially towards the end of Dad's life, you always encouraged me to go and spend time with him, having already lost your father, Harry. Even as the laundry piled up, dinner never got made, and dishes spilled the sink. David and Brielle, Grandpa loved you very, very much. Dad really helped raise David, and you'll hear from him a bit later on how he impacted his life, I'm sure. Jerry, Mateo, and Lorenzo, you brought a smile to his face and made him very proud to be a great grandpa. The last thing I want to share is that Dad moved into the Steingallen home in October of 2013 to reunite with his wife, Becky. People would always remark on how sweet and loving Dad was with her, holding her hand for hours at a time in the lobby by the fireplace. So I'm sure most of you know that. On one occasion, a friend of mine was introducing her brother-in-law to me and said, "Oh, this is my friend whose parents always sit by the fireplace holding hands." At that, he pulled out his smartphone out of his pocket and said something to the effect of, "I took this photo, not knowing this was your parent, and whenever I get into an argument with my wife, I bring up this picture and I remind myself, this is what love is all about. Dad, I love you. I will always love you. You have been a great father, a mentor, entertainer, and even a vazio. But we wouldn't have it any other way. Almost every Friday night we talked, Dad would say, Shabbat Shalom, honey. One of my final words to him this last Friday night was Shabbat Shalom, honey. And we will spend another Shabbat together soon.
Thank you, Sean. I'd call now upon grandson David Romano to say a few words.
First of all, thank you everybody for being here. If you're here, Dave had some sort of impact in your life one way or another. I want to first start off by saying that he wasn't as heavily involved with the synagogue during the last few years. Some obvious reasons, some not, you know, maybe other things are going on. But this is the greatest thing in the world. He was remembered by Chazan, by Rabbi Myers, by Ike Azos. whom he probably hadn't had significant contact with in years, and yet here they are. And this is one of the greatest things about Judaism ever, automatically. If you guys could do one thing for me, I want everybody to stand up just for one moment, please. I want you just to look at the person next to you, left or right, I don't care if you know them or not, and just give them a hug, please. Thank you. That not only bodes to the essence of Judaism, but it bodes also to what my grandfather was about, always hugging somebody, always kissing somebody, always giving somebody counsel, and he was the preferred uncle or cousin to come to for advice because he was so objective, and that objectivity came from mainly, I have a eulogy from Isaac, I'm not going to read it all, but I'm going to fill in some points that he had, and one of the things he said was that Dad had one foot in the old world and one foot in the new. He was never completely scared or shooed away change. I was born in not an ideal situation, and he adapted and he changed for that. He raised me as if I was his son, and I considered him my father, not my grandfather. And that was one of the things that Isaac put in there. So he was very adaptive to change when necessary, which made him a very special person as well. When I woke up today, I was happy because he's no longer suffering, not physically, not in this world. We exist when we're in this world, but we don't live until after this world. He used to say that to me, and I believe it. Another thing he used to always say was that he was not as rich as some, but richer than most. And what he said when he said that was family oriented. It had nothing to do with finances or anything of that nature. It was family oriented. And the point that I made initially about the synagogue being completely involved during his life and even after his life relates to what I'm saying when I say that. And that's what makes me so proud to be a Jew as well. And he instilled that in me. You know, whether we communicate, whether we sometimes don't go to synagogue, sometimes we're not as involved in the community, we all care and love, we care about and love one another immensely. So, Azans, Rabbi, I really appreciate you guys being here. It means the world to me. And as far as my mother and my aunt and the immediate family, Brielle, Mateo, Miso, J-Ray, I love all you guys immensely. And that love that he instilled in me, I try to convey to you as much as possible, even though I don't do the best job at times. I love you. Thank you for everybody for being here.
Thank you, David. I can now call upon Carol Cruzan to say a few words.
Contacted by Rochelle and Estelle and asked to say a few words and to be representing the Romano side of the family. I had a phone call from Estelle, not last night, but the night before last. And she was at home in her own home in Kent. And I said, you have been so involved in, you know, care of your father and family. I hope you're just going to stay there and crash and sleep in your own bed tonight. And her answer was, no, I can't do that. I want to be with my sister. And that conversation triggered in me thoughts about the fact that I think Uncle Dave had a real symbiotic relationship with the women in his life. They were there for him, and he was there for them, starting with his mother, beautiful, strong, and proud Esther, who to all of us, of course, was Grandma Romano, and his three sisters, Faye, Edith, and Rose, none of whom are able to be here today, but whom we love and miss. And what I remember is that all of their lives, Uncle Dave was their baby brother, and they adored him. And coming after that was his wife, Becky, and I didn't realize until I read the obituary that they had been married 67 years. That's a really, really long time. So, and their relationship was beautiful and loving, and they raised together a wonderful family. And out of that relationship, I'm just talking about women, so don't anybody feel left out, but Estelle and Rochelle just grew up to have such a caring and loving relationship with each other. And I think that it's not just Uncle Dave. I think that sisters being close is a Romano trait, as evidenced by Faye's daughters, Marcia and Elaine, and Rose's daughters, Kathy and Carrie. Kathy and Karen, not my daughter's Carrie, sorry. Kathy and Karen, who are so supportive of each other and literally would walk through fire for each other. And they're all also wonderful mothers and wonderful aunts. So strong women are one of the things that have come out of the whole Romano family, and Dave was certainly a big part of that. My biggest memories of Uncle Dave and Auntie Becky are the Passover Seders that we had every year. And but I want to go back a little further, because I also remember the places they lived. And when I was really young, before we started having Passover Seders at their house, they lived in the Monmouth apartments. And to this day, every time I drive up Yesler and I see the Monmouth apartments, I remember Becky and Dave living there. I mean, I was a kid visiting them, but somehow that had a really powerful impact on me. And then they lived in Seward Park in a house, I think it was 55th Avenue South, and we had Seders there for many, many years until they moved to Mercer Island, and then we had Seders there for many, many, many years. Since I'm representing the Romano family, I did ask for some input from some of my cousins and other family members. And Seth, Elaine's son, sent me an email talking about how important Uncle Dave was in his life, and that whenever there were family gatherings, he always sought him out because... and Marcia's son Brad sort of said the same thing too, that they looked for Dave for sort of for guy talk. And they talked, Seth said they talked about his favorite interests, which were boxing and wrestling and other sports. And Uncle Dave also talked to them about the days when he was a cab driver. And apparently early on he picked up a lot of soldiers and sailors and took them, I don't know where, but according to Seth, it probably can't be mentioned in mixed company. And Marcia and I have a really powerful memory from the time we were little, of every time we were anywhere where Uncle Dave was, we ran away from him. Because he used to pinch our cheeks so hard that we just were like, and now it turns out, Marcia tells me, that Brad, her son, has the exact same memory of Uncle Dave pinching his cheeks. But you know, his beautiful smile that always made his eyes twinkle, in the end, won us over, and we loved him. We loved him dearly. Karen Zimmer talked to me about the fact that when she started a catering business, she got a lot of help from Uncle Dave, because having run the taverns where there probably was food, I don't know, probably food as well as beer, that he was able to give her a lot of really good supportive advice when she was starting her catering business. And I have one more story that I got from Marcia. Marcia and Harry and their kids spend a lot of time in Palm Springs. And Becky and Dave also spend a lot of time in Palm Springs. And one year, Marcia and Harry went out with Becky and Dave to a restaurant in Palm Springs called Romano's. And when they got there, the whole place was absolutely jam-packed and there were no tables and there were people waiting. So Dave went up to the owner or the host or whomever and pulled out his driver's license and he said, "I'm Dave Romano and I'm the uncle of the guy who owns this place." And Marcia said they were absolutely mortified, but they got the best table in the house. So I think that was my favorite story of everything everybody talked to me about. But I just want to end by saying we love you, Uncle Dave, and we'll always miss you.
Thank you, Carol. I'd like to call upon Carolyn Kessler to say a few words.
I know many of you, but let me introduce myself. I am Carolyn LaMarche Kessler, and my dear mother, Lenora Piha LaMarche, of blessed memory, was the older sister to Becky Romano, Uncle Dave's wife of 67 years. So obviously I have known Uncle Dave for a very long time. I represent, along with Carol, one of the many nieces and nephews who were proud to call Dave Romano Uncle Dave. When I was 4 years old, I was a flower girl in their wedding. That's the first of many wonderful memories I have of Dave and Becky. Carol alluded to the Monmouth Apartments. How many of you remember the Monmouth Apartments? Hands up. Yes, I remember the Monmouth Apartments at 20th and Yesler in central Seattle. And Carol, I also remember that as one of their first homes. It was a very Jewish neighborhood in those days. And since I lived at 22nd and Yesler, I was able to walk over just those two short blocks to spend time with a very favorite aunt and uncle. Then when I was 9 years old, our family moved to the south end of Seattle and lived just off of 46th and Genesee. And what good news it was for me when the aunt and uncle I adored, Becky and Dave, also moved to the Seward Park area, and Carol alluded to that. So it shows the impact that they've had on our life. And they lived, yes, it was on 55th Avenue, just off of Myrtle, not far from the Klein-Gallen home. One of my best memories of that house was the surprise 13th birthday party that my aunt and uncle hosted for me. All my BBG and AZA friends were there, and I still cherish the memory of that day. As I grew older, I used to babysit for Isaac and Estelle. There was no Rochelle yet. Not only was it a good chance for me to make some extra spending money, but I loved the 8 to 10 minute car ride home with Uncle Dave when he would enthusiastically tell me about his day and always showed so much interest in my day. Now in those days I used to bite my nails and Uncle Dave was always on my case about that, encouraging me to not do that. I used to like to especially chew on my thumbnail, and when he would ask to look at my nails, I figured I could sort of hide the thumb and show the other nails, but no, he was too smart for me and always made me show my thumb first. So even today, if my thumbnail, and I don't have great nails, get a little bit long, I always think of Uncle Dave. Over my adult years, I certainly have come to appreciate Uncle Dave more and more and saw him as a great role model for how I want to live my life. I know that each of my three brothers and I saw him as a second father who was willing to take time to listen to us and advise us about our lives, and how beautiful that we've heard from so many others about that very same theme. He was such a loving husband and really served as a role model for his extended family as a caring and devoted partner to his wife, our dear Auntie Becky. And as Carol alluded to, how many of us remember in recent years watching them sitting at the lounge in the Klein-Gallen Hall holding hands. How beautiful. In fact, just a few days before he died, when I was visiting him at Overlake Hospital, and he was quite weak by then, he whispered to me, "How is Becky?" And I said, "Uncle Dave, dear, she is fine, and she's looking forward to seeing you when you return to the Klein." And he smiled. Uncle Dave knew how to have a good time and enjoy life. In many ways, he personified that phrase, joie de vivre, literally the joy of life. So many of us love the fact that he and Auntie Becky had traveled the world, traveled the United States, went to Palm Springs each winter, and that served for me personally as a model for me as to how I wanted to live out my retirement and my senior years. My three brothers, Michael, Tony, and Rick, were also very close to our Uncle Dave, and I now would like to read and share with you some of their comments. First, Tony. Tony says, "Uncle Dave was always genuinely interested in my siblings and me. He was a man of good humor and often joked around with me. Probably my favorite memory is during the time I bartended for him at the Cellar and at the Interchange. I always looked up to him because he always did what was right when it came to family." Next, brother Michael. Michael says, "After 2.5 quarters of doing poorly in community college, I was advised by the school to either shape up or ship out. So what the heck, I thought, I'll just quit and join the Army. With the Vietnam War heating up, everyone in the family tried to convince me to stay in school. Uncle Dave was selected as the family representative. He picked me up one evening with the idea of straightening me out and took me to my first tavern to educate me. When he realized that he couldn't convince me to change my mind, he changed his approach from trying to dissuade me to one of preparing me for the next 3 years of military service. He told me that basic training in the Army is a mind game, and that my mental attitude and the friendships that I would make would contribute to making my stay fun and maybe even profitable. During my 8 weeks of basic training, I found that nothing had changed from the time he served until I went in. It was exactly as he had told me. I felt so prepared and familiar with the game that I needed to play. He was in my thoughts many times during those weeks and the 3 years that followed. Uncle Dave would include new Gillette razor blades in his letters, thinking I wouldn't have access to those in the PX. I'm so glad I shared those memories with him and we could laugh together. I remember staying at Auntie Becky and Uncle Dave's home for a week when my younger brother Rick was born, and several times after that. I always felt so comfortable with them. After my dad Duke died, Uncle Dave and I had a good cry together, and I got to hear his memories of the crazy things that he and my dad did together. As ADHD as I was in those younger days, Uncle Dave was always so good to me. I got to bartend for him and Uncle Joe on Sunday evenings. Do we see a theme here? At the Interchange Tavern in Kent, he will be very missed. And finally, my youngest brother, Rick. After my enlistment, I too heard about the Army when I was 17 years old from Uncle Dave. He told me about Monterey, California, Fort Ord, and Army life, which, like he told to Michael, was really quite accurate. His advice and reassurances helped to calm the anxiety of beginning a frightening new chapter in my then young life. After my dad Duke died, Uncle Dave made many comments to me over the years, at times with tears of grief in his eyes, about what a great man Dad had been and how much he missed him. Because of the respect and admiration I always had for Uncle Dave, that really meant a lot to me. My dad was a well-accepted outsider in the Sephardic community, but I think Uncle Dave was one of the few Sephardics who truly understood him. Uncle Dave lost his pot belly and spare tire in his 40s. Remember how much heavier he was? And his show of strength, of will, and self-discipline later became a template for my own 90-pound weight loss 10 to 12 years ago. For me, his life has truly been inspirational. I want to thank you all for allowing me to share my own tender memories and those of my brothers of a very dear man. We will miss many things about Uncle Dave. While his warm smile, big hugs, caring demeanor, and great advice may be gone, our precious memories of him will certainly endure forever. I had also shared with Rabbi that I have been on the phone 4 to 5 times over the last 2 days with our cousin, Rabbi Shmuel Piha in Israel, who loves Dave very much and asked me to share some words. So I do have some additional words from Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel Piha, our cousin from Yerushalayim. Rabbi Shmuel Piha says, "Dear David, I want to say a few parting words to you. It says in Kohelet, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 1, a good name is better than good oil, and the day of death is better than the day of birth. How can that be? When the soul comes into this world, everyone is happy. A new baby has arrived, and when a soul leaves this world, everyone cries. Rashi answers us. The Midrash has a parable. When the ship leaves the port to begin its journey, no one knows what that journey will be. Everyone is on pins and needles, but when the ship returns, then everyone knows what the outcome is and is happy and relieved. So too, when the neshama, the soul, arrives in the world, no one knows how this neshama will do. But when the soul leaves this world, the journey is finished, and we know what that soul has accomplished. So now, Dave, we are all here to say goodbye to you. Your ship has arrived at its destination. People know who you are, your family, your relatives, your friends. Dave, you have a Shem Tov, a good name. Like it says in Pirkei Avot, one who acquires a good name acquires it for himself. As it says in the Talmud, you live in this world with a good name, and you leave this world with a good name that is more precious than anything. I would like to finish by mentioning, still with Rabbi Shmuel, a few memories that loom in my mind about you, dear Dave. Number one, when my father, Jack Piha, of blessed memory, passed away 46 years ago, and I was young, I remember your talking to me and giving me great comfort. I'll always remember that. Thank you. Number two, you and Becky came to my son Yaakov's bar mitzvah in 1996 in Yerushalayim with Becky, Joe, Abe, and Julie DeLeon. That meant so much to my son, to me, and all of the children. Thank you. Third, you and Becky visited Israel not so long ago, and you spent Shabbat with us. I remember this like it was today, how impressed you were that everything stops on Shabbat, no cars, no buses. But what impressed you most was all the kids, the little girls and boys, happily playing on the streets and sidewalks. So many kids, you said, you just couldn't believe your eyes. Thank you, Dave, for being you. You were there for me. May you go in peace and rest in peace, your cousin and friend forever, Shmuel Piha.
Thank you, Carolyn. I'd like to offer a few words in honor of Dave from the perspective of our community, our congregation. You know, one of the things that came up in the eulogies was the image of Dave and Becky on their Seder table on Passover. And it got me thinking that that may be an appropriate introduction to my words. You know, the Seder is a very unique Jewish event. We put it behind us this year. It's a couple of months back in time. But every year it comes back up again, and it's a unique opportunity for the Jewish people as a whole, and families in particular, to create a learning experience, an educable moment that lasts for 6 hours, but an educable moment at every Jewish home that is really a classroom at a dinner table. There's no other people that has that kind of experience and that kind of event on a yearly basis, and here outside of Israel it's twice a year, two Sedarim, And the idea that the relatives would recall the Seder table as that which characterized their relationship with Dave and Becky is very significant, because the Seder table is a place where tradition is passed down. It isn't just ideas, it's not just details or laws, but it's the Jewish experience, the Jewish historical experience, filtered through the mind and the words of the people at the Seder. And the stress and the focus of our tradition is children. So here we are gathered to say our farewell to Dave Romano, and we have the children speaking. And the children are saying that this person was a combination of two unique qualities of individuality, a person who was very colorful, who had a lot to say and a lot to offer on a personal basis, but somebody who was strongly connected to his Jewish tradition and Sephardic tradition in particular. My experience with Dave's family, more immediately, was with Rochelle and Estelle. Whenever our administrative assistant goes on vacation, Estelle's in the office, we trust her. We trust her implicitly with all of our precious details and membership information. And she's very trustworthy and reliable. And what comes out when Estelle comes to Ezra Becerrath is this tremendous love and desire to help. And that's a tribute to Dave. The idea of being a mitnadev, a volunteer, somebody who's not in it for themselves, but is out for the betterment of the community and the people and the family, in Estelle's case, as we heard in the last months and weeks of Dave's life, how she remained dedicated to him as a daughter, is something that it's a rare quality in our day. And Rochelle, we trust Rochelle with our children. She's been so involved in our congregation for so many years. And the mothers who've had the opportunity, fathers as well, but mostly mothers are the ones I talk to, just see Rochelle as a parental figure, as a sister figure, but a parental figure to their children on Shabbat and the holidays. And so the Seder table, which is the framework of passing down of Jewish tradition, is really a framework and a forum to train the children of the next generation. And from our experience as a congregation, we've been the beneficiaries of Dave Romano's Seder table. It's also very instructive to David. His first comments related to the synagogue and the congregation and the people who represent, were just representatives of the synagogue and of the community. But that's one of the first things that came out of David's mouth about his grandfather, was the importance and significance of community is also very instructive. And we know that banim, b'nei banim harikim banim, that grandchildren are children. It's not a stretch in the Jewish tradition to say that a grandchild is a child. It's very, very much a truth of our tradition. You know, in the last several months and several weeks of Dave's life, there have been some unique challenges aside from the tremendous effort and exertion that it takes to take care of a person in that kind of condition and to be concerned about an ailing mother as well. That perspective on Jewish identity, which I'm sure was strengthened in Rochelle by her recent visit to Israel, that came into play very meaningfully in decisions and approaches that had to be taken in the last weeks of Dave's life. And Rochelle and Estelle were constantly deferring to the approach of the Jewish tradition, the Sephardic tradition, to this very serious situation. It wasn't like, we have a personal issue, we're not going to really be bothered with what history or tradition tells us, but the history and the tradition informed Rochelle and Estelle's actions every step of the way. And that's a very, very great praise of the family of Dave's children, who did not look at this situation as if they were on their own, as if they had to make independent ethical decisions. They sought the assistance and the aid of our Torah tradition. We're approaching Shavuot. And Shavuot is the holiday of the giving of the Torah. And I was reminded of two things that had to do with Dave specifically that I'd like to share with you that relates to Shavuot. And one of them, as you know, there are 10 statements that were made in Mount Sinai. There are 613 mitzvot, but there are 10 statements known as the Ten Commandments, which is really a misnomer, because they're really just 10 categories. And on the right-hand side of the Ten Commandments are mitzvot, are commandments that pertain to man and God. I am the Lord your God. Don't have any other gods before me. Don't take God's name in vain. And the left-hand side of the Ten Commandments are the laws that pertain to man and his fellow man. Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't covet. But there's a conspicuous mitzvah at the bottom right-hand side of the column that should be referring to the man-God relationship, and that is Kaved et avicha ve'et imecha, honor your mother and your father. What's it doing there? Why is it in the wrong column? So our sages explain to us that it's not in the wrong column, that when you honor your parents, you're essentially honoring God. Because shlosha shutafim ba'adam, there are three partners in man. There's a person's mother, a person's father, and there's a kadosh baruch hu, the Holy One, blessed be He. So every time you're showing reverence for your father, whether it's during his active time, during the heyday of his life, when you're driving down to California, and all these stories that we heard, or whether it's in his later years, that's a part of the mitzvah of kibud av ve'em, of honoring parents, but moreover, it's honoring Hashem, because everybody is made the tzelem Elokim, in the image of God. Everyone has a holy neshama, a holy soul within them. So honoring a person is honoring God, and how much more so is honoring the person who partnered with God in bringing you into the world. Secondly, we know that there wasn't such an illustrious history of the giving of the Torah. When the Jews waited impatiently at Mount Sinai for Moses to come down, he didn't come down according to their calculation of time. And so they built a golden calf. When he came down the mountain, he broke the tablets at the foot of the mountain when he saw what happened. Those are called Shivrei Luchot, the broken parts of the tablets, the broken tablets. They were replaced by another set of tablets that Moses carved out. But our sages tell us that Luchot v'Shivrei Luchot munachim ba'aron, that both the plain, the new tablets, the tablets that were reformed after that incident, and the broken tablets, they're both inside the ark. And our sages look at this homiletically as a reference to a Torah scholar, an individual, and every Jew has Torah within them, who's been broken, who's deteriorated. A person who had a sharp intellect and a great physical body and tremendous physical condition, as we know, we're mortal, and little by little that breaks down. But the Luchot, the youth, and the new leadership, but the Shivrei Luchot, the broken tablets, they're both in the Aron, they're both holy to God, they're both significant, they both deserve our kavod, they both deserve our honor. And when that ark is lifted up, people should stand not just for the Torah, the Luchot, the ones that are intact, but for the Shivrei Luchot, for the broken tablets. And when a person passes, we see them in a state of weakness, but we know that behind those Shivrei Luchot, those broken tablets, there is somebody who had a vital life, who contributed to family, to community, to the world. And that's what we're honoring today.